And again, I want to thank you for holding this hearing this morning, you and Ranking Member Shelby. First, there's no question, as you've already underscored, that the credit and housing crisis continues in earnest to this day. While this committee has been active in looking into a number of the problems associated with the current crisis, for many Americans, this issue came to the forefront after the near collapse of Bear Stearns, closely followed by the unprecedented government-assisted sale of that firm to J.P. Morgan, an event that continues to be widely scrutinized. I believe that without the prompt action from the Federal Reserve and Treasury Department over those few days in March, our financial markets could have been exposed to systemic risk. While I remain concerned about the precedent this action sets for future crises, as well as the perceived exposure to the U.S. taxpayer as the ultimate backstop as part of the Federal Reserve Treasury negotiated agreement, it appears that the regulators on the ground made the most of this situation at hand. Recently, there have been some encouraging signs. Confidence in the credit markets appears to have improved somewhat over the past 2 months, represented by the fact that the so-called yield spreads between bonds issued by securities firms and U.S. Treasuries have narrowed, which some economists would point to as a positive indicator. In addition, the IPO market appears to be showing some signs of life. As of the end of May, the Renaissance IPO Index had gained nearly 17% over the past 3 months, albeit still well below comparable activity level from 2007. Clearly, we're not out of the woods yet. Consumer confidence, as calculated by the University of Michigan, sank to a 28-year low last month. This comes on top of the widely followed Case-Shiller Housing Index, which showed that home prices nationwide plunged 14% in the first quarter. Finally, as the events of this week have already demonstrated, with the major U.S. investment banks slated to begin reporting second quarter earnings in the next few weeks, there is an ever-increasing likelihood that there will be additional losses and further asset write-downs at these institutions. Mr. Chairman, when this committee examined the government facilitated buyout of Bear Stearns in early April, I brought up the issue of credit default swaps and the role they could have played in its demise. As I mentioned, as I understand it, this market has exploded in size from an estimated $1 trillion in 2000 to $62 trillion in market exposure this year. This dwarfs the size of the underlying bond issuances and has the potential to unwind the credit markets by exposing counterparty risks. While the regulator aspect of credit default swaps might seem like an esoteric issue for some, although $62 trillion can hardly be considered esoteric, I think it underscores an important point. These instruments, like so many other structured products and derivatives, operate in an environment where there is no formal clearing process or minimal public reporting regarding the true value of these assets. While I do not question that the creation of these structured products has delivered a measurable benefit to the American consumer by lowering borrowing costs, it is becoming clear that a lack of transparency in the pricing and trading of these instruments has contributed to the credit crisis. I challenge federal regulators to begin more closely monitoring these effects and to seek ways to improve transparency regarding the pricing and trading of these instruments across the financial marketplace. Last week, the FDIC published its quarterly banking profile for the first quarter of 2008, which provides insight about the stability of the U.S. banking industry. Several items caught my eye. Industry earnings declined 46% from last year. Loan loss reserves now absorb a higher share of revenues, which eclipsed $37.1 billion in the first quarter. And problem loans continue to rise across many banks' real estate portfolios. In addition, the FDIC reported that the number of so-called troubled institutions increased from 76 to 90 in the first quarter, with no end in sight. This marks the sixth consecutive quarter that the number of problem institutions has increased and reflects the largest number of institutions on this list since the third quarter of 2004. Clearly, these are not promising developments, and I hope that Congress has empowered the FDIC, which I believe is responding to this crisis to the best of its ability, with the necessary tools and resources to handle the new realities facing the banking industry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator, very much. Senator Corker, any comments?